You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. Last year was a record year for Michigan lottery money going to schools. Here to talk about that and some other lottery questions is Jeff Holyfield. He's the Director of Public Relations at Michigan Lottery. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
So tell us about this record number of dollars for schools.
Well, actually, I've got an update on that, Lester. We just recently concluded our fiscal year, and we set another record for the contributions to the school aid fund. Based on preliminary numbers, it looks like it's going to be about $915 million, which is up from about $890 million the year before, which was the previous record. Players are love our games that are out there. They're out there buying them at a record pace. Overall, players bought $3.3 billion in our products last fiscal year, and you have to keep in mind, the most expensive ticket we sell is $30. So just a lot of player loyalty and support. You know, they enjoy the games. I mean, we're in the entertainment business. And so that's what our focus is on, is providing players with games that are entertaining and fun, you know, and exciting, because obviously when you win money, that's exciting. And last year, our players won $2 billion in prizes. That's good news all around.
So more than $900 million for the schools, that's a lot of money. It amounts to, of each lottery dollar spent, 29 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I keep hearing from people is every time we do a story about money for schools, we are asked the same question by people. What are you talking about? Doesn't the lottery pay for schools? And that makes me wonder if the Michigan Lottery has oversold its contribution to the school aid fund. Has it?
I would disagree with that. We have not oversold it. In fact, for the most part, we've just done our business and not really made an effort to reach out and let people know how much we contribute. Basically, to do that, we'd have to advertise, and we'd rather spend the money on advertising to get players to buy more of our games so that we'll have more money for the school aid fund. The problem is, first of all, school aid funding is one of the most complicated topics in Lansing, and the issue gets into the fact that people have this perception out there that the lottery pays for all of the schools. Our contribution makes up about 7.5% of the school aid fund. It's about a $13 billion pie. And while our part is a good-sized chunk, it's still only a small slice of that pie.
Okay, so $900 million and more. 915, is that what you said, $915 million?
Yeah.
It's what goes to the schools, $2 billion in prize money. Where does the rest of the money go?
Well, the rest of it, roughly 9 cents of every dollar goes to retailer and vendor commissions. We had record retailer commissions last year, and again, we've got 11,000 retailers around the state. Most of them are small family-owned businesses, so we provided about $248 million in commissions to them last year, and there's 3 cents from every dollar that is required for the operation and maintenance of the Michigan Lottery, or administration, rather. Where does that rank us nationally in terms of the percentage of our gross sales that go to our beneficiary? We're in the top five nationally for that. Our staff got about 175 employees at the lottery. You look at comparably sized lotteries, they typically have staffs that are twice that. You know, our focus is on being efficient, effective, providing as much money as we can to the school aid fund.
We're talking with Jeff Holyfield. He's the Director of Public Relations at Michigan Lottery. Hey, there are a couple of news items that have been in different publications, and I want to ask you about some of that. One of the contracts Michigan Lottery has is with a company called IGT. What does IGT do for the lottery?
The IGT, if you go into a retail store and you see those nice orange terminals and the Lucky Spot devices where a player can scan a ticket to see if it's a winner, IGT is responsible for those terminals and also for the underlying system. And it's a huge IT system that we have to have, because it's, with $3.3 billion in purchases from players. There's a lot of volume there. There's a lot to keep track of. For example, one thing is that we have our instant game tickets. All those codes from those tickets are entered into the system. When those tickets are scanned at a retailer, the retailer can tell the player it's a winner, it's not a winner, or if it is a winner, here's how much you've won. We do 40 to 50 new instant games a year. The ticket quantity on those can range from 8 million to 12 million. And so that's a lot of information to have there. It's got to be accessible. You know, we're committed to providing an excellent experience to our players. So when they go into the store, they want to know right away. So I think I won $100. Did I win? And that system is there to say, yes, you did, and so they can get their prize then. That's the kind of volume, but they do a lot of the heavy lifting, if you will, on the back end for us.
Well, the reason I bring up IGT at all is there was a recent report which found that that company, which is a worldwide provider of services to lotteries, is a champion at tax avoidance. It's avoided hundreds of billions of dollars of taxes through setting up corporations in tax-friendly countries and other tax avoidance schemes. And it makes me wonder, why does Michigan Lottery do business with a company like that?
Well, first of all, you'd have to talk to the IGT folks about their tax structure and what they do there. The reason we do business with somebody like that is that we do a request for proposal, because we're out to get the best value that we can for the people of the state of Michigan. In fact, we recently extended our contract with them a couple of years ago. And again, we put out a request for proposal. We got in a number of responses. They were evaluated by an independent team, and that team said, yes, IGT provides the best value.
In another story, this one by the Columbia Journalism Review, also known as CJR, they reported on state lotteries across the country, not all of them, but a good number of them. It found in some states people had won repeatedly, which seems really odd considering the chances are so high, are so low, actually. How often does that happen in Michigan that you have repeated winners?
Well, we, what we do in Michigan is that we mainly focus on repeat winners with our retailers. That what we're looking at there, we have a system that's set in place where if a retail owner, one of our licensees, claims 20 prizes of more than $600 in a year, or claims $20,000 in total prizes, then we will look at them and conduct an investigation. What's going on there, or happens in the industry in a handful of cases, a fraction of a percentage, is that there's a practice known as discounting, where you have people who will say, hey, for one reason or another, I've got this winning lottery ticket. I don't want to go and cash it under my name. I'd be willing to sell it to you. So what we're doing is, we're looking at the retailers and on that, and looking at the latest year on that, 2016, we had about 20 retailers that we investigated for that. And part of it, too, multiple winners, is there are some people who play a lot. And if you play a lot, you're going to win a lot. So there are a lot that goes into it. But the simple fact of the matter is you have to put that into perspective, that it really, 20 retailers out of 11,000, and it turned out with most of those cases, there was no evidence of discounting. They were just, in some cases, they're their own best customer on lottery products. And so that's an issue. It's out there. Some people play a lot and they're going to win a lot.
So I guess part of the reason that somebody who wins would sell their ticket at a discount to somebody else is an effort to help the original winner avoid paying back taxes or child support or some other tax dodge. You've worked on the problem with retailers, but regular people can do that as well. Is there anything you can do about that?
Unfortunately, we don't have many good options there because if you can imagine this transaction, it's between two people, done in private, and they typically don't talk about it or post about it on Facebook or anything like that. And, you're absolutely right, because in Michigan, under state law, if somebody claims a lottery prize of $1,000 or more, then we check with the Department of Treasury to see if they owe any child support, back taxes, fee to the Secretary of State's office, have some kind of court judgment that's registered against them. And in those cases, when we find that, we will withhold, up to the total amount of the prize, to pay that debt. And in some cases, we have folks who will get a letter instead of a prize check because we withheld the full amount of the prize to pay their obligation.
In this CJR article that I mentioned earlier, it reports the Michigan Lottery replied to their request for information, their Freedom of Information Act request, that the request said it would take approximately 2.5 million hours to fulfill it and incur an enormous fee. The CJR calculated that meant the agency would take a minimum of 285 years to fulfill the request. And then after the CJR insisted your agency put the response in writing, they got another email. It was sent a few days later stating the data could be pulled together for free in 3 days. But when the CJR got the data, It found that the Michigan Lottery had invoked an optional provision of Michigan privacy law that redacted the last names of the winners. That meant the data was pretty well useless for the purposes of seeing how many repeat winners there have been in Michigan. So my question is, if this was an optional provision of Michigan privacy, why didn't the Michigan Lottery be more transparent with this story?
Well, first of all, the CJR mischaracterized the whole interaction with us. Because what they didn't say is what they wanted, which is basically they thought, for some reason, that our retailers, when, if you win a prize of up to $600, a retailer may redeem that prize for you. So they were under the impression that retailers kept records of the names and identities of all of these players. And so what they requested was basically that we run a daily report for each of our 11,000 retailers, going back as far as we could, which was 15 months, and that each of those reports takes about half an hour. So that's where the computer time estimate came from. We never got to the point of presenting them a bill because we went back to them and said, hey, this is overly broad, and it looks like, we could sharpen this and work with you and try to help you get done what you want to get done.
As happens between agencies and reporters.
Yeah, it happens between agencies and reporters and all of that. And then, once we explained what was available and all of that and said that we can, provide you with this, that, or the other thing, or you won't get what you want, they said, well, no, we don't want that one then. And then they made a modified request, and we do have a state law that says that if you win more than $10,000 on a state-only lottery game, then you are guaranteed anonymity. So it's against state law for us to provide any identifying information about a winner of more than $10,000 in a state-only game. Then there is also a provision in the FOIA Act that says to protect personal privacy of citizens, that you may withhold that information from a FOIA request. And we've had a longstanding policy at the lottery that we would do that. And so we responded to these inquiries with that. And the data they got was basically a winner's list. Again, nothing as voluminous as what they had requested. But we redacted everything as far as the identifying information, everything but the first names. So we did our best to comply, but we were following state law and our policy on that.
I understand that. I guess the question then is, why is Michigan not more transparent? Because other states are. They offered that information. A couple of dozen of them gave that information without any problem. So why is Michigan more restrictive?
Each state has its own FOIA laws. Each state lottery has its own policies. I can't speak to them. It's not a universal law or anything. I mean, it's, for example, the good folks in Ohio do what they do, and we do what we do here in Michigan.
Fair enough. I want to ask you one more question, and I'm always curious about this because I got to confess, it's very rare that I buy any kind of lottery ticket. But when I go into a shop...
You're breaking my heart.
When I go into a shop and I see all of the choices, I just think, man, this is overwhelming. And you just mentioned that you add scores of additional games each year. Why have so many games? What's the advantage in that?
Well, the advantage in that is that players tend to like newer games. And so one of the things, if you go into a store and you see the plastic display cases with the lottery tickets in it, they've all got eye-catching designs, bright colors, and all of that. And it's really a case of, again, we're in the entertainment business. And the first thing you have to do is catch somebody's attention. So when they're there at the counter buying their gas or whatever, then they look over and they see something that says, went up to $1 million for $5. Hey, I'll take a chance at that. And so that's why we do that. And it's really what the players determine how long a game will stay in the marketplace. So, for example, we've got on Halloween, actually, we're going to be launching our holiday instant games. And we typically, especially the lower priced games on those sell out before the end of the year because people like to buy those for stocking stuffers and gifts. And it's just, again, it's in a large sense, those are impulse buys. We also have people who just love instant games and play them on a regular basis. It's part of the whole our whole effort to appeal to the public, again, entertain them, provide them a value. And you know, the fact is that the Michigan Lottery last year was the number one lottery in the country as far as growth. And a large part of that is that we had a 16% increase in our instant game ticket purchases. You know, for a lottery that's been around nearly 45 years, that's unprecedented. So, you know, there's a method to all of that, and it's really trying to appeal to players. You know, you'll see different themes. I mean, players love a crossword themed game called Cashword. That's great. I mean, and then there are other themed games, Tetris, for example, that harken back where people say, oh, I remember I used to play Tetris. That was great. I'll buy that ticket. I feel lucky with it.
What do you know about the people who are buying? I mean, what are the demographics? Are you know, rich people buying more than poor people? Poor people buying more than rich people? What do we know?
Well, what we know is basically the lottery players reflect the state's population. They're almost evenly split by gender. Ethnicity parallels the results of the latest census. 75% of our players have an annual income of $25,000 a year or more. 43% have an annual income of $50,000 or more. 40% have college or postgraduate degrees. You know, 37% have some college. So, there's this misperception out there that it's only the folks on the lower end of the economic scale who play lottery games. And you know, the fact is everybody plays the lottery games. Millions of people buy our games each year. And, the fact is that we know, for example, that 72% of the adults in the state of Michigan buy at least one lottery ticket in a 12-month period. And then if you break that down to a month, it gets down to about 43% buy a lottery ticket each month. So, your experience, you're not an outlier. You're very consistent with what we see. And of course, we get into situations where Powerball and Mega Millions, when those jackpots reach high levels, that's when you get a lot of folks who say, hey, I want a chance at that. If you go back to January of 2016, the Powerball jackpot was up to $1.6 billion. And that's a world record. And, it was one of those things that everybody wanted at least one ticket, and some of them many more. So, a lot of it comes into, that kind of excitement when we got a jackpot run.
Well, congratulations on the increase in sales, $915 million for schools. And again, it doesn't pay for all the schools. It pays for about 7.5% of the school aid fund, but still a substantial amount of money. Jeff Holyfield is the Director of Public Relations at Michigan Lottery. Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure.